Welcome to the Partners in FinCrime podcast in association with FSCom. My name's Evan McGuigan.
And I'm Richard Dunlop.
In this podcast series, we'll be looking to discuss all things anti-financial crime.
We will be deep diving into cutting-edge stories as well as other interesting topics in the financial crime space. In this episode, we discuss the FCA's consultation paper, which proposes updates in key areas including sanctions, proliferation financing, and transaction monitoring.
Hey Rich, how's it going?
Yes, very well, Evan. Very well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks. Not too bad at all. Just back from a couple of weeks in Vietnam there. So the jet lag fortunately seems to have subsided somewhat. Always quite a jarring prospect coming back from a big trip like that.
Yeah, it looked like another great trip, Evan. Really amazing experience.
What have you been up to?
Not a whole lot, really. We obviously have this kind of Belfast Marathon that we have mentioned previously on the podcast kind of looming over us for this Sunday. So I think it's being met with different variations of emotions from various staff members. But yeah, we've managed to get out for a couple of runs ourselves, Evan. Mm. So at least we know, well, you certainly can run the length of distance required. So that's really all that we need to do.
Yeah, 7 days to go. For anybody who listens to this podcast before race day, which I guess is the 5th of May, a Just Giving page will be going up on that website. And I guess obviously will be shared on our LinkedIn and everything else. So if anybody does fancy supporting a group of compliance consultants trying to run the length of themselves in the Belfast Marathon, then certainly any support's greatly appreciated. I guess that's obviously about a week or so away anyway. But today, what are we going to be talking about today, Rich?
So we're going to be discussing the FCA's recent consultation paper, which is proposing some updates in key areas. So we thought we'd discuss that, Evan, talk about obviously each of the areas and what this kind of means for firms. But maybe it's worth just kind of setting out with what the Financial Crime Guide actually is. And a little bit of admin around what firms, you know, can do in response to it. So I'm happy to maybe set that out. And then it's kind of a good area just to dive into each of the areas that the FCA is kind of consulting on.
Yep, absolutely. Sounds good to me.
Okay. So the Financial Crime Guide provides practical assistance and information for firms who are FCA supervised, and its contents are drawn primarily from thematic reviews with additional material also included to reflect other aspects of financial crime. So they're updating, or they're proposing some updates to the Financial Crime Guide in relation to sanctions, proliferation financing, and transaction monitoring. And they're also proposing to add references to crypto assets, consumer duty, and then there'll be some consequential changes throughout the guide. So this paper in particular is relevant to all FCA financial crime supervised firms, as well as those that are supervising money laundering regulations. So that includes obviously the crypto asset businesses. Effectively, the next steps for firms will be to comment on the consultation questions, and this needs to be done by the 27th of June, but we can maybe discuss next steps, Evan, you know, towards the end of the podcast. And we'll obviously leave links on LinkedIn that firms can easily access both the updates and the proposed updates, but also look at those questions and find links to how to respond. I think maybe we can tackle each of these. I think the first three, obviously sanctions, proliferation financing and TM, might take up the crux, but we'll also touch on the other areas we talked about there as well. And maybe, Evan, you could start off with the sanctions piece and what the proposed updates are there.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good to me. And I think, as is always the way with these things, when the likes of the Financial Crime Guide or other aspects of guidance are updated, they tend to get updated on a fairly periodic basis. I can't remember the last time it was that the Financial Crime Guide was actually updated. But to your point, some of the updates that have been proposed are really more just sort of catching up really with some of the regulatory obligations which have come in over the past couple of years. So you mentioned the likes of crypto assets, like they're essentially chucking the word crypto asset or VASP in there. whereas it wouldn't have been there previously. But we can come on to some of those points, as well as obviously removing, you know, aspect references to European Union and whatever else. But sanctions, proliferation, financing, and TM, you're bang on the money there. They're the meatiest changes which are proposed anyway at this stage. And to kick things off with sanctions, first off, people will remember that the FCA undertook some work, I believe it was last year, going in and assessing the systems and controls relating to financial sanctions, risk mitigation, compliance for over 170 firms across a range of sectors. I think we actually talked about this on a previous podcast, potentially the one with Anna Sweeney a number of podcasts ago. But in essence, the FCA looked to assess firms' controls using this brand new analytics-based tool, as well as through specific intelligence gathering and reporting, the review of reporting that they'd received. So a combination of analytics, but also direct supervisory communication. On the basis of this, and on the basis of the results that the FCA had published from their review, they're essentially proposing to make a good number of changes to Chapter 7 of the Financial Crime Guide, which is the section that covers financial sanctions. And some of this will seem probably fairly old hat to a lot of people, but some of the proposed changes are somewhat more meatier. Given that we've already podded on this topic, maybe we shouldn't go into too much detail on some of them, but just at a high level, some of the changes that are due to come in are more prescriptive guidance on reporting requirements for firms to report sanctions breaches, or interestingly, guidance on how to report to the FCA if a firm itself is directly or indirectly subject to financial sanctions. The FCA is also proposing to provide some more guidance on governance arrangements to oversee sanction systems and controls. Senior management accountability, as we know, continues to be a key focus and a real driver of good practice as far as the FCA is concerned. So the FCA is looking to provide some guidance on that senior management accountability and oversight piece. That includes where functions are solely contained within the firm itself or also outsourced functions. Also some reference to you know, public-private and private-private information sharing. One of the key things that came out of the FCA's key findings in September 2023 was stressing of the importance of management information to help firms ensure that the operation of their sanction systems and controls are resourced and monitored effectively. Detail on how firms can assess their risk exposure too. So they propose some fairly decent guidance on how firms can do sanctions risk assessments, what sources they should be reviewing. As is always the case in the Financial Crime Guide, some areas of good and poor practice around sanction screening tools, some references to how CDD, you know, should be used as part of a sanctions risk mitigation framework. I think a lot of the time people focus rightly on the implementation of RegTech tools and, you know, transactional screening, but some good guidance on CDD. And I guess that's ultimately the guts of it. So essentially, it's completely aligned with the FCA's previous publication on their sanctions review and the guts of the changes here to the FCG. Well, the proposed changes anyway are putting the lessons learned by the FCA into the FCG. Any of those pieces sort of jump out to you?
Yeah, I suppose to your point, Evan, there's kind of, I suppose, a mixture here of the usual topics which we tend to see. And that's obviously top-down compliance in the fact of, you know, senior managers being accountable for these practices and for the implementation of the various procedures we have. I suppose interesting, and we probably talked about it before, is understanding the screening tools. So while it talks about outsourcing, you know, of I suppose staff functions, we're also talking about using third party vendors or tools to conduct our screening for us. And often, and we'll go on to it with the transaction monitoring piece also, is that we over rely on these. We bring them in, we spend money on them, and then we kind of expect them to just be plugged in and work and function. And what we're seeing here is obviously that, first of all, they need to be monitored, and we need to do that testing and review and provide that MI back to our senior managers and understand for ourselves just how they're operating. But we also need to calibrate them correctly, whether that's understanding what lists they are screening against, whether it's understanding how often those lists are being updated. You know, we've talked, I think, many times about obviously the situation in Russia, whereby, you know, sanctioned entities or persons are being added to lists, you know, on a very, very regular basis. So knowing that that's happening, and also looking at your fuzzy logic settings and realizing what's coming in, you know, over or under the line, whether we've calibrated it to look at aliases, to look at various spellings of names. So all of these things are really important, and not just buying a piece of tech off the shelf, but having the staff behind it who not only know how to use it, but also how to check that it's actually in line with someone's risk appetite. So I think that's really important. And then CDD, very easy when we talk about, I suppose, AML, that CDD is always the crux of it, but understanding that it all goes back to that. And so knowing your customer gives you the best opportunity to understand if you are being exposed to any types of risk, being able to discount various alerts, being able to understand where something might be a true positive. But it does feel like the FCA is really driving, Evan, on that reporting piece, and I suppose driving firms to be clear that we also have to report to OFSI, but that the FCA expects reports to be made to them. And then, of course, there's the consideration for the usual suspicious activity report. So I think that feels to me that would be interesting to see what comes out of that as the consultation moves forward.
Yeah, spot on. I think it's that reporting piece to the FCA, to your point, yeah, is definitely seems like an area that they seem to be developing in the financial crime guide here. I know, obviously, we would often do financial crime audits. And one of the questions we would ask is, you know, what happens if you were to identify a potential sanctions breach? And obviously, you know, maybe one of the things actually we can pull out of the guidance here first, or the proposed changes to the financial crime guide, is do you have a sufficiently detailed, standardized and prescriptive process by which you should conduct reporting to the relevant sanctions implementation authority? But let's take that as a given. You know, you're going to have your process to, you know, report to OFSI if you've breached. But so too, quite rightly, firms do have reporting obligations to notify the FCA if a potential breach of sanctions in this instance results from a significant failure in their systems and controls. So, you know, an avenue of good practice that the FCA seems to be pushing. And I can only imagine that this is on the back of the fact that as the Russia-Ukraine situation has developed, and potentially as the FCA has gone through their assessment of 170 firms, they presumably have come across some examples of sanctions breaches that weren't reported to them, that they discovered after the fact, or maybe OFSI informed them rather than the firm informed them. So certainly something to keep in mind. You know, it's quite obvious that you should report to the sanctions authority, but yeah, the FCA is certainly pushing, you know, under Principle 11 and everything else that firms should notify them if something has went awry.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, should we move on, Evan, to the second proposed update with regards to proliferation financing? And again, this will be something that's been discussed in the podcast, but has obviously been really prevalent for us in FSCOM when going in to look at firms since 2022. Because this was actually amended in the MLRs at that point. And that's for the requirement of firms to identify and assess the risks that proliferation financing of which its business may be exposed. And the changes here are just really to align the financial crime guide with the MLRs and that update. So we've typically seen it that this is, you know, would be around Regulation 18 of a risk assessment in the MLRs. And this is going to be proposing to add to Chapter 7.2 in the Financial Crime Guide. So effectively what we're seeing there, Evan, is typically when the risk assessment's been done, firms are looking at the risk across customer, jurisdiction, you know, delivery channels, etc. And I suppose how they incorporate proliferation financing into that is very much up to the firm, whether they consider it a category on its own, like transaction risk, etc., or whether they incorporate it into all of those different categories. But the FCA's expectation here is that very much the proliferation financing risks are looked at in the same way that other risks are looked at. And that means setting out your risk, understanding whether you have controls in place to mitigate those risks, and then understanding whether that remains in line with your risk appetite. So I suppose what firms may want to take away from that is, well, how do we actually, first of all, assess whether we have exposure to proliferation financing risks, and if we do, what are the best ways to mitigate? So we've kind of thought about that, Evan, and I suppose identification of these types of risks. So proliferation financing is obviously, we would have to look at the industries in which we operate, because obviously industry risk linked to the types of products and services that our customers might be importing, exporting, dealing with on a kind of daily basis. So firms should also be aware of dual use goods. And again, there's great guidance out there for what would constitute a dual use good. And again, I think firms should tie that back to their industry risk assessment, knowing the areas in which their customers are likely to operate, and also linking that back to jurisdictions. So, you know, if you are operating in those higher risk jurisdictions or jurisdictions that have been linked to kind of goods that may be seen as either dual use or just directly linked to arms or weapons, then firms need to look for that. And I suppose building it into your own customer risk assessment as well. So not just looking at your whole firm risk assessment, but building these bits into the customer risk assessment, so that your holistic risk rating of your customers has included for proliferation financing exposure. Anything further to add on that, Evan?
No, that sounds spot on. I think I wouldn't be letting the cat out of the bag here, Anathan, by saying that improvements regarding firms' proliferation financing risk assessment is probably one of the more common AML audit findings that we see at the minute. As you say, it came in 2022, so it's not necessarily a new obligation by any means. I think this requirement still probably requires a bit of traction for it to get the attention it deserves. And the FCA, I'm sure, is aware of this, and they have to update the FCG to align to regulatory and legislative obligations in the MLRs. But I think this is also a bit of a shot across the bow, remind firms that they have to obviously go and do this. Agreed with all your points on what firms can do as part of their detective controls to try and identify exposure to proliferation financing. And yeah, as you say, it has to be proportionate to the size and nature of the business too. So the FCA, to your point, you know, you can build your MLTF risk assessment to become a MLTFPF risk assessment and undertake that same sort of process, or, you know, have your own PF risk assessment if you feel like your business is particularly predisposed to proliferation financing. A UK-based FCA-regulated firm that's only dealing in individual customers, maybe card payments, something like that, in the UK only, probably isn't going to be hugely exposed to proliferation financing risk. But if you were, for example, a firm who deals in FX or international payments, or you had, you know, clients involved in shipping, it might predispose you to like nuclear, radiological, chemical or biological weapons contravention, then, you know, you're probably want to go do a bit more of an all-encompassing risk assessment. The FCA, I think, may be just worth flagging as well at the end of this piece, but they do specifically mention that the UK National Risk Assessment of Proliferation Financing 2001 as a really good source for people to get their head around PF risk in the UK. And there's a lot of good substance in that document to get firms thinking about how they would do their own internal PF risk assessment. The FCA also talks about the FATF's work on proliferation financing as a useful material towards conducting a PFRA. So yeah, I think that's the guts of it for proliferation financing risk assessment. I know we've talked about whole firm risk assessments quite a bit in this podcast in the past. So proliferation financing, consider your exposures, consider the effectiveness of your controls, tie that to your internal risk appetite, and then just make sure that you've got a good handle on mitigating that risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, Evan. Shall we move on to the transaction monitoring piece? So effectively here, the FCA are proposing to provide more guidance to help firms in adopting and maintaining automated monitoring systems. The FCA have noted that in its supervisory work and support for innovation, it has seen examples of poor software development, and we can go on to talk about that. It is worth noting the FCA intends to maintain its existing position that automated monitoring is only required where appropriate for the size and nature of the business and is not necessary if manual processes achieve an effective outcome. But I suppose what they would probably put is push back to firms who are looking at that more manual monitoring and making them be very clear in how that is suitable for a business of their size and how they're not needing that automated process. Is it worth starting with the bad practice? I suppose it's always good to end on a positive note and maybe start with what the FCA set out, and we can maybe pick apart a couple of them, Evan. But effectively, some of the bad practice they've noticed. So a threshold-based rule-driven transaction monitoring system is used, but it is poorly calibrated and the firm struggles to articulate the rationale for particular rules and scenarios. So I suppose we kind of touched on it in the sanctions point of, again, this potential to employ an off-the-shelf rule-based system whereby the rules haven't really been calibrated to the key risks of the firm. And again, it probably goes back to your point in proliferation financing, where knowing the type of firm you are you conducting card payments on behalf of individuals? Are you, you know, conducting large FX transfers for corporates and going to be going into various jurisdictions and dealing with high amounts of money on a regular basis? It's about calibrating these rules to the type of firm you are. And that's obviously when you employ the tool, it's then about making sure you're doing enough testing and considering whether those rules remain fit for purpose, whether they are actually flagging you to potentially suspicious transactions, or whether we're seeing a lot of false positives, a lot of white noise. So I suppose that's a fairly standard one, but that's certainly what the FCA have noticed, that while we can rely on that tech to provide us with alerts, the alerts are only driven by the intel that we provide to the system. So the second point, the firm uses a transaction monitoring system with set rules, which again, they mention off-the-shelf systems, and do not calibrate these to the firm's individual needs or review them regularly for efficiency. So I think we've probably covered that all in the first point. But again, that review, we talk about compliance monitoring a lot on the podcast and a lot when we discuss audits, etc. But of course, transaction monitoring systems need to be updated as our business grows and scales and our clients change, and maybe we start to offer new products, we start to find ourselves operating in jurisdictions that we didn't maybe intend to or necessarily think we would. So of course these rules need to come on that journey with us and need to be tested and reviewed, and again that links back to the MI that we provide up to our senior management team. A firm does not verify that a counterparty firm is monitoring customer activity. The third that the FCA calls out is a firm not verifying that a counterparty firm is monitoring customer activity. Mm. So this might be in a case of embedded finance or nesting relationships whereby a firm is providing services and that firm is then providing their own services to their own underlying customers, and having a knowledge and an understanding of what systems and controls they have in place to monitor the behavior of their own customers and I suppose who holds the pen on what in that relationship should be very clear at the outset as to what the kind of principal firm is monitoring and what they expect the firm that they onboard to be doing. And the final bit of bad practice is a firm using an automated system with a lack of understanding of what the system is detecting and why. And this may be because of, for example, staff turnover, poor documentation, or weak communication with the systems vendor. So I think that probably still encompasses points one and two. However, obviously, we might be looking also here at training. And when we do have, you know, large amounts of staff turnover, you know, people coming in, maybe not understanding who we are, what we do, and what our system's trying to do. Poor documentation. So again, just keeping your policies and procedures up to date when we do make changes. So that's all of the bad practice, Evan. Does anything jump out at you there that's surprising or you think firms should be really aware of if they weren't already?
I think probably not necessarily surprising, but I think it's clear that the thread the FCA is pushing here is against off-the-shelf TM and against approaches to transaction monitoring that aren't understood. And we do see this on occasion through audits and uplifts of control frameworks where maybe you're starting business, you're freshly regulated or going through the application process, you look to get in a RegTech tool, and you know the RegTech tool comes with off-the-shelf rules. It seems like a very reasonable place to at least start discussions and consider where things should be. Where that obviously becomes a problem is you do have to have some level of assurance that your transaction monitoring is operating effectively. And it's just hard to imagine that if you were to stick with off-the-shelf rules, off-the-shelf value, volume triggers, that that's in any way tailored to your business model at the end of the day. So it's clear that the FCA is, and we see this in the good practice, which as usual is essentially the opposite of the bad practice. But, you know, the FCA does point out the fact that it's good where a firm tailors a monitoring system to its business risks and relevant typologies. So using your whole firm risk assessment at the outset, tailoring your rule set accordingly, straddling that line between actionable intelligence versus system noise, and ultimately testing that your systems and rules are reviewed for the right outcomes. So certainly seems to be the case that actually understanding your TM system, understanding what it's detecting and why, is as you say, similar to the guidance, proposed guidance changes on sanctions, is where the FCA is ultimately looking to go here. And your mention of bad practice being that a firm doesn't verify that a counterparty firm's monitoring customer activity is probably a key one too. Embedded finance, nested relationships, FIs, having other FIs as clients, which then expose the principal FI to the underlying transactions of the client FI's customers and flows, is a key focus of the FCA. It is a very key focus on their financial crime agenda and their supervisory agenda at the minute, as the FCA attested to at our recent regulatory payments outlook in January. This is going to be a really hot topic, and a principal shouldn't assume that its client is ultimately conducting sufficient monitoring. The banks are also getting quite hot on this too. The required scope for independent third-party audits now is generally involving some assessment of controls around embedded finance. So this is going to be key, and it's interesting to see this make its way specifically into the financial crime guide.
Yeah, absolutely. We won't spend too much time on the good practice, but we'll maybe move on to the self-assessment questionnaires. However, the good practice is essentially the opposite of what we've just talked about with regards to the bad practice. So that's the first point, is tailoring the transaction monitoring system rules to the business, the risk and the relevant typologies. And obviously you kind of talked about how well to do that, Evan. That's linking back everything to that cornerstone document, your whole firm risk assessment. If something's called out as a risk, it needs to be addressed. And if that is a transaction-based risk, then our transaction monitoring system is where we pick it up and ensure that it's mitigated. So that's really, really important, tying everything together. And that monitoring is applied where appropriate at multiple levels of aggregation. So this is really tailoring it to your customer types, to their transactional activities. And so that's looking at the lowest types of transaction level. We look at the aggregate of transactions for an account, the aggregate of accounts for a specific customer, and then also linked at the entity level. So a group of linked customers by relationship managers. So this is understanding your client book holistically and making sure we can actually start to tailor our rules also towards the types of transaction we service, but also on a customer basis. And there might be different ways to do that. We obviously, a lot of our FIs are going to risk rate their customers. We're going to have high, mediums and lows. We might start to tailor the rules there. We can tailor our rules for various jurisdictional transactions. We can also tailor our rules based on a corporate or an individual level, because again, the transaction volumes, values, velocities are going to be different. So I think it's getting into that granularity of detail to make sure that our rules are bespoke and they're not just a kind of one size fits all. Even if we've looked at our business model. We also are going to have subsets within that, especially within our client base. So looking at that as well. And the final thing is for monitoring arrangements to seek to take a holistic view of the customer. So that's whether automated, manual, or both.
Mm.
Some of the self-assessment questionnaires for people to take away are, and I'll just read these out and we can maybe have a little chat into them, Evan, but do you have an understanding of the effectiveness of your automated monitoring in different business lines? What actions have been taken to mitigate shortcomings that have been identified in business lines? What consideration has been given to alternative varieties of automated monitoring, including the use of novel approaches? And where a firm uses automated methods for triaging alerts generated by threshold-driven transaction monitoring systems, e.g. scorecards overlaid existing systems, hibernation of alerts until further data prompts is to be revisited, or other systems to prioritize which alerts receive manual attention, can this be justified within the context of the firm's overall approach to monitoring? So a lot of these self-assessment questions, they ask the FI to consider what they've implemented and whether they think it's fit for purpose and to be able to evidence how they've done that. I suppose this is always just, it's, I suppose sometimes can be difficult for a firm to make sure that what they have done is appropriate for what the FCA requires. But these self-assessment questions help us to take away and address each of these one by one. And if we can truly then, I suppose, provide relatively decent output to each of those questions, then we can consider that we are in line with not only the regulations, but now these proposed updates to the financial crime guide.
Yeah, agreed. I think regardless of what the final document is, you know, when the consultation's done and the FCG is updated, I think the primary immediate takeaway for firms at the minute is definitely to go and at least have a think about what your answers would be to these self-assessment questions, be that for TM or the other bits, because it's quite a powerful exercise to run yourself through that process of, you know, what the regulator would be asking of you on these specific control pieces. No more comments from me on the TM. That all seems fairly straightforward.
Yeah, exactly. So look, it's maybe worth running through the other three elements that we discussed at the outset. I mean, these are, you know, not going to be as chunky for us to get into, but worth talking to. The first one being the inclusion of crypto assets. So this comes really from, in January 2020, the FCA becoming the supervisor for certain crypto asset businesses. At this time, the FCA referenced the guide as a source of useful material for these firms. However, in the proposed changes, the FCA will be setting out an expectation that firms registered under the MLRs will have to take into account the FGC when designing their financial crime systems and controls to comply with the financial sanctions regime and the MLRs. So I suppose just a slight shift there, Evan, and we'd like to think that most of the crypto asset businesses have been using the guide in that, in what it is as the guide to employ best practice and to look at how their systems and controls are being implemented. And so for the majority of crypto asset firms out there, you'd hope that this isn't a huge uplift, but really it's kind of, I suppose, making that more formalization of what the guide needs to mean to these firms. There's also, which will probably be met with joy in the crypto asset area, is that they are proposing to provide links to useful guidance materials for crypto asset firms, including guidance on compliance with the travel rule. I know you've had a good say on the travel rule, Evan, so I suppose crypto asset firms will be quite happy to hear that.
Absolutely. It's an ongoing challenge, so always good to get the view of the regulator on what good and bad looks like around travel rule compliance. So that's certainly a positive. And then, yeah, I think probably not much else to say on crypto assets. As you say, previously the FCG was said to be a useful material. Now the FCA expects firms to take into account the FCG. So proposed changes, you know, there's some mention of good and poor practice around blockchain analytics, which is good to see. But other than that, the vast majority of the changes seems to be adding crypto assets, adding VASPs and so on, at least adding those words into the pre-existing components of the guide itself. But an important change regardless.
Of course. Something similar, I suppose, with regards to consumer duty. The consultation's pretty light on this, but it does say that following the consumer duty coming into force on the 31st of July 2023. They're proposing to include text that reminds firms that where relevant, the duty must be considered alongside financial crime obligations. So not a whole lot to take from that, but I suppose what I could probably give to firms is to first of all consider the scope of the duty. So the duty is sometimes wrongly thought of as just being applicable to firms who service only individuals. Well, actually, there are the micro enterprises and also some small charities that if you are servicing will bring you into scope. But also we talked about that embedded finance piece. And I suppose if you're involved in the payment chain and at some point a consumer is going to come into contact with something which you facilitated, or your website may be viewed and used by the individual or another entity in scope of the duty, then that does put you in scope and again should be considered. Firms will need to consider their policy with regards to consumer duty, and that may mean developing a standalone policy or may mean just including it within their own framework of policies and suite. So I think that's important. I think as well, looking at training, I think staff being trained on what the requirements of the duty are something that firms could consider implementing. And then there is also, if you want to go that step further, we talk about MI and getting this to the senior management team, assigning a consumer duty champion is a requirement. And so firms might be looking to do that to make sure there's someone in the firm who is that responsible person and who's going to be driving discussions of the duty at the kind of senior enough level and making sure that they're hearing about various types of MI, customer complaints, vulnerable customers, fair value assessments of their products and services. So I think those are a few things that firms might look to consider to ensure that they're able to evidence that the duty has been considered.
Sounds good. And I'll always have to defer to your good wisdom on the likes of consumer duty. Yeah, that all makes sense to me. And the interesting thing the FCA adds into it as well, though, is adding some text to remind firms that where relevant, the duty must be considered alongside financial crime obligations. So don't forget about FinCrime risk mitigation due to a focus on consumer duty pieces.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think the final piece, Evan, consequential changes, we don't really need to go into. This is just really proposing some other changes to make sure the guide remains up to date. Like you said, removing EU-specific citations, so updating good and poor practice examples on data security, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that firms probably won't have too much to consider there.
Yeah, agreed. It's really just a bit of housekeeping, isn't it? Mostly good to flag in any case. So I guess that's maybe the guts of our conversation, Rich. What do firms need to do then? Obviously, give it a read, understand the proposed changes. If you're that way inclined, remind me the date for returning on the
27th of June. 27th. So there's questions actually set out in Annex 1 of the consultation paper. So that's what the FCA is asking the firms to have a look at. Send their comments by the 27th of June. And then I suppose it's a little bit of a case, Evan, of watch this space.
Well, certainly something for firms to sink their teeth into there anyway. If any of these proposed changes don't end up in the final amended financial crime guide, I think there's still a strong message from the regulator throughout these proposed changes that firms can probably action in the immediate. Other than that, I think it's pretty much us for today.
Brilliant. Thanks, Evan. Pleasure as always.
Yeah, likewise. Love to chat.